Hello and welcome to Homestead Hens and Honey, a beekeeping, chicken keeping, and general homesteading podcast. This week I am returning from a little bit of an absence with lots of updates and some animal shenanigans stories. To get started, this is actually the third time that I've attempted to record this episode. I did record an episode and somehow managed to mess up something during editing that I couldn't walk back, and it was a disaster. I have a new microphone and I'm using some new software, and I think I pressed something that I shouldn't have and I just couldn't fix it, and I was spending so much time trying to fix it I decided to just re-record, but I couldn't get an episode out that week. And then I tried to re-record and I've had some animal related issues pop up that pulled me away, so I have been absent. I send my apologies. It started well. So in July, at the end of July was my birthday, and so I took some time out just to, you know, enjoy various birthday activities and celebrations. We did the That was my dog shaking in the background. We did the Great Lakes Medieval Fair. I dressed up as a forest fairy and had the best time, and everyone was so sweet, and I got compliments on my costume, which made me so happy. And I got to see the joust, which was great, even though they couldn't use their microphones because the area was so wet. There was a concern about them getting electrocuted, but we cheered as best we could and tried to understand it. And you know, you're just there to watch them joust. It's you're not really into the whole story of it. I got so many wonderful gifts, many of which were bee related. So one of my favorite ones, and I will try and remember to post a picture of this on the Instagram, is a bees in your backyard poster for the bees of North America. I've had it on my wish list for a really long time, and I have now put it at the top of our stairs so that I can see it every day. And I do refer to it quite a lot. We saw like this really cute little bee yesterday that was kind of fluffy like a bumblebee, but not as big, not as fluffy, and had white banding on its abdomen. And we were trying to identify what kind of bee we think it might be, and we didn't figure it out, but it was fun to try. So real quick, after the birthday stuff, which like I said, it was great, I got great bee gifts, and if you put a bee on something and give it to me, I'm going to be thrilled. Same with chickeny stuff and anything related to like tarot. So I got some tarot decks and tarot books. I got a heated hairbrush. I feel like such an old woman. I didn't realize these things existed. And then I was told of it existing, checked it out, put it on my wish list, received it generously from my mum for my birthday. And it's a game changer. It is just, my hair is so frizzy when I blow dry it, but with a heated hairbrush, it cuts like half that frizz. It goes really quickly. It looks great. I'm thrilled. I can't wait to pack it in my gym bag once winter is here, and I'm going to have to start drying my hair before I leave the gym because otherwise I will freeze. But so my break started all good. It was all birthday stuff. It was fun. I just took some time out to enjoy everything. The summer, you know, relaxing, playing with my various birthday gifts. Then I was catching up on all the kind of homesteady things that I do, you know, every day, every week. I'd fallen a little behind. I'm always playing catch up. And then my health issues played up, and so I was sick for a while as well. And I couldn't find the time to record, or I would record, but I wouldn't have the time to edit. So I have like a number of half recorded episodes, and I just decided to scrap them and do this new one. The good news, though, is that I finally had that procedure that I've been talking about for a little while now, that would let me know whether I was due to have surgery or not. And the good news is that it didn't hurt as bad as I thought it would. Well, it did. It hurt very, very intensely, but for like 30 seconds at a time. So that's relatively bearable. And the end result was that, yes, there's no way of me getting out of surgery of some kind. And ultimately, what we decided on is to have a hysterectomy. So I will be saying goodbye to my very annoying, troublesome uterus, hopefully in January. My husband wants to be here for as much of the recovery period as he can. And so that's a good time for us. I won't be working with the bees, obviously. They're all be asleep. I'm not supposed to do any heavy lifting. And your things with the reptiles kind of slows down. You know, I'm not selling anything when it gets cold like that. I'm not shipping things. And so, you know, my husband's back from all his travel engagements that he has. So January is our hopeful date where I finally will say goodbye, uterus. I never loved you, and I'm glad that you're leaving. So I will probably keep you updated on that as I find out. I have not actually received my date yet, but I was told they'll give me a call back as soon as they can. So before I get into all of my news, there's so much to update on. I do want to quickly cover some sad news from the homestead and get that out of the way so that then we can listen to nice fun things. So the sad news is that I did have to have my frizzle hen Petal euthanized a couple of weeks ago. I had previously talked about Petal having a prolapse that I found her. She'd passed an egg, had obviously prolapsed slightly, and either she or one of the other girls had pecked at it and caused bleeding. So I brought her in, I cleaned her up, I put honey on the exposed tissue, and I gave her an anti-inflammatory that I had on hand for chickens, and I kept her in for a couple of days, and the prolapse went back in. So I put her in the coop with the babies, or the velociraptors, because I knew that they wouldn't pick on her, that they'd be terrified of her, which is exactly what happened. And she went on to lay two normal eggs with no issues, so I thought that we had solved the problem. But I came back out probably a week after that last healthy egg, and she'd prolapsed again. So at that point, I took her to the vet. I actually had to drive almost an hour because my regular vet was at their Cleveland clinic. They didn't have anything available at the one that's like 10 minutes from me. So I drove out to Cleveland with her. It was actually a really beautiful day, and I was in a good mood, so I can't really complain. So we went out there and spoke to my vet, and we decided to do x-rays so we could see what we were looking for. And a fecal, because she had diarrhea and it was unclear whether it was from the prolapse or from parasites. But I declined doing blood work. I have never found blood work on a chicken to be useful. It's expensive and it never really tells us very much. So at this point, I was like, no. So we did the x-rays while I was there. Vet came in, showed me the x-rays, and things looked actually quite promising. So usually, when a chicken has prolapsed like this, and it's almost always a hen, it's because there's something going on with the reproductive system. And usually that something is that it's massively swollen. And my vet told me that what she expected to see was the reproductive system taking up almost the entire abdominal cavity to the point where it was sort of pushing up against the air sacs, which is what chickens have as opposed to lungs. But with Petal, yes, her reproductive system was much larger than it should be, but it wasn't close to the air sacs. There was still space. And so my vet was like, you know, she's actually a really good candidate for just throwing like a ton of anti-inflammatories at her and antibiotics and hoping that that will reduce the swelling of the reproductive tract. And then that way, you know, hopefully this won't happen again. And the vet also said that she could put two sutures into Petal's cloaca to hold everything in place. So remember, a prolapse is when something that should be inside has come outside. And so these sutures would hold everything where it was supposed to be. So I had her in the house for a week after that. And I was making jokes about her being the fanciest chicken in the block because she'd had a vaginoplasty and all this kind of stuff. And for the first, 72 hours, I guess, things actually looked really promising. She was brighter. She ate better. The diarrhea was down. So she was passing normal stools between bouts of diarrhea. But then, sorry, I have a view out my window and I saw my dogs just take off and I was worried about what would happen because last time that happened, Chappie brought a squirrel in the house. Anyway, Petal. Yep. So things were going well and then they started to not go well. So the diarrhea was constant. She had like a completely messy vent all the time. And at this point, we were pretty sure it was from the swelling because on the x-ray, we'd seen that if you imagine that the colon runs in a straight line from where it sits in the abdomen to the cloaca, hers, because of her reproductive system taking up so much space, had pushed the colon out of alignment. So it was taking extra straining from her, an extra effort to pass stool. And as a result, she ended up just having this kind of constant leakage. So it was very unpleasant. You know, she's a little dirty butt. And I could tell she was losing weight just by feeling her again. Every time I was, you know, I was pilling her twice a day and I could tell that she was losing weight and she wasn't as into the food. And she actually popped one of her sutures while laying an egg. And that was a normal egg. But then she laid another egg, which didn't have a shell. It was just the membrane. And I sort of got this feeling that I knew what we had to do. And on her week follow-up with the vet, my regular vet actually wasn't there, but I saw another very nice lady vet. And I just told her up front, you know, like, I don't want to do surgery. I think it's time to let her go. And after examining her and confirming that she'd popped a suture and us talking about how she's still producing eggs, like even if they're messed up eggs, she agreed with me that this wasn't going to get any better. And she respected my decision not to do surgery. And she also agreed with me that there was no guarantee that Petal would make it through the surgery. And so, you know, I gave her kind of a hug and a kiss and I cried a whole hell of a lot and I had her put to sleep. I will say my poor vet, they're so sweet. They bring me my bill while I'm in the room and, take my payment and then go up front. So I don't have to be in the reception area while I'm crying. So I cried a lot. But afterwards I felt actually a lot of relief. I really was worried that we were just dragging on the inevitable and I really don't want any of my babies to suffer. So as hard as it was, Petal went bye-bye. And I feel a little bad. Petal's never had the best run of things. You know, she came to me with this really bad back wound that I complained about and I got refunded her purchase price. And I had her checked by my vet to make sure it wasn't like parasites or disease, that it was just scabbing from injury. And it took her a while to heal from that. And then she never grew feathers in certain places. And then she cut herself somehow out of the blue. And so she needed to be treated for that. And she just always had something weird going on with her. I just don't think she was a very healthy chicken. I did get her body back. I did a necropsy at home. And we definitely made the right decision. Reproductive tract was huge. It had not gone down in size since the x-rays. And she had multiple yolks inside of her. So she was still actively trying to produce an egg a day. And really the biggest thing as well was that she had a shellless egg in there that had come out of the reproductive tract and was just sitting in her abdominal cavity. And it was clearly beginning to rot on the inside. So that would have eventually caused probably sepsis, honestly, if it had gone on much longer. And that's a very nasty way to die. And then also, like, her digestive system was suffering, I think, from being pushed out of alignment because it was, I've never seen anything like it. The intestines were really like little sausage balloons. They had a very weird feel to them and they were just filled with liquid. It was really unpleasant. So that did confirm to me that we made the right decision with her and that she was now no longer going to be suffering. It's kind of a shame that you can't give chickens a hysterectomy, I think it would solve a lot of problems. But yeah, there's my sad news. So I'm sorry to Petal fans, and I'm sorry to be a downer, but it's, you know, this is farm life. This is life on a homestead. This is life if you have pets. It's just what we deal with. But on to less depressing news. So that's my sad news. We've got that out of the way. Let's go talk about something else. So in terms of updates, the last, what, two or three times I tried to record this episode, I started talking about how the heat wave broke and the nights were low, like in the 60s, and the days were in the 70s. And it just felt like everything, like the whole world took this great big breath and let it out. And you could really feel the shift in the seasons from summer as we approach fall. And I kind of waxed poetic about that for a little while. I am now eating those words. We've had a heat wave again for the last couple of days. I guess there's this huge like air pocket or bubble of air that's been over, like it started in Texas and stuff, and it's been traveling through and it's been making places unbearably hot. And we're getting kind of the tail end of that now, or the outer edge of it. So we've had, you know, days up in the 90s, and the temperatures at night have stayed quite warm as well. And it's miserable because my body had just adjusted to being colder in the mornings and colder in the evenings. And now it's really, really fucking hot all the time. But it's supposed to break very soon. So fingers crossed. It does not feel like fall out there right now, but it has been feeling like fall. And when it did, I had mixed feelings because on the one hand, I was like, I'm not ready to start thinking about winterizing my bees. I'm not ready to start thinking about putting them to bed for the season. But at the same time, I'm tired. I'm tired and I'm behind, and I could use the cooler weather if I'm going to try and play catch up in the garden. So in terms of sort of gardeny things, like what's going well and what isn't, my corn actually produced for me. I was able to take some usable ears of corn that I ate last night actually with my husband, and that was genuinely delicious. That was a huge win. I took some corn that I thought was ready. The tassels were brown and they seemed like they were just small, but I'm not really sure. I don't think they were ready. I don't understand why the tassels were brown, because if they weren't ready, because everything kind of says that's the sign. But anyway, I thought that since I already have them, I might like chop them up and pan fry them and see if they taste any good like that, like whether they taste like baby corn. I don't know. I don't want to waste it. It probably won't go to waste though, because if it's not good, I'll just give it to the chickens. But yeah, I have some more ears which should be ready within a week or so. So that's quite nice, since I got nothing from the corn last year. My squash that I put in front of the corn bed isn't doing great. I'm not sure it's going to produce fruit in time. I might get some very, very small squash from it that I can just kind of give to the chickens. I transferred one of those squash plants, I wasn't sure which one it was at the time, but I now know it's a butternut squash, into where I had been trying to grow my cucumber, but that was a bust. You know, my cucumber didn't grow at all. And it's flourished. I mean, it's just exploded. And I don't know why it's doing so much better there than it did in the previous location, but I will be keeping squash in that area from now on, now that I know this. And I already have two adorable small little butternut squashes growing, and looks like more will be on the way very soon based on the petals of the flowers. So I'm feeling really pleased about that. My tomatoes have been a mixed bag. I have taken tomatoes to harvest and I've made some really yummy pasta sauce with them, and I've sliced them up and I've had them in sandwiches. And as always, I've been picking the cherry tomatoes right off the plant and just nom 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 where I stand. But I feel like maybe I over pruned the tomatoes at the front, or maybe the heat that we had was too intense. They just didn't do as well as I was hoping. This is in the new raised bed that I've never used before, so it's also possible that I didn't put enough stuff in for the soil. You know, I do feed, but I'm wondering if maybe they needed a higher quality soil than what I used. It's something that I'm going to be thinking about for next year. The bell peppers that are in with those tomatoes really struggled with the huge bouts of rain and then very high heat that we had. So I got like blossom end rot on a couple, and I've just cut some and thrown them, out on the lawn for various insects and animals to eat. But I did get one beautiful, fully ripe bell pepper from it, and I have more that are growing that actually look really good right now. So if we don't suddenly get very cold weather within the next couple of weeks, I should get sort of a handful of bell peppers from that plant, which is not a lot, but it's so much better than nothing. I will take it. I'll put some pictures on my Instagram of my recent harvest, where I took some ears of corn and tomatoes and the bell pepper, and just to kind of show you what I'm working with. My big pumpkins have been vining like crazy and producing a ton of flowers, but so far no fruit. There was a little fruit and then it kind of fell off the vine and just, you know, decomposed. I don't know if something went wrong with it or if an animal knocked it loose or what, but there's going to be no big pumpkins. But my Jack B. Little pumpkins, which are these little adorable, cute, decorative and very delicious, apparently edible pumpkins, are doing great. There's two which are almost full sized, and it's producing extras. Like there's at least two more that are growing, and I'm just so thrilled. And again, I'll post a picture. They're so cute. I love tiny pumpkins. For my basil that I had in my ladder bed, on my back deck, I had two basil plants, and this is the first year that I had Japanese beetles eat the basil plants. Now, they didn't completely destroy them, but they did set them back a bit. I was able to get, you know, enough harvest from them that it feels worthwhile, particularly when I was making pasta sauce. But that was a real bummer. I had no idea that Japanese beetles would eat basil, because I've never had this happen before. And I've had basil every year that we've struggled with Japanese beetles. I guess I really do need to just get more milky spore to put down, and, you know, just keeping up with those applications to kill the grubs in the soils to help reduce the adult beetle population. But the issue is, if my neighbors aren't using any kind of product like that there are Japanese beetles obviously in the area, so I can just hope that I can cut back enough that they're controllable with other like trapping methods for next year. We shall see. I do think it was better this year in the sense that I went longer without the Japanese beetles than I've usually struggled with them. So I'll take that as a minor win. Let's see, what else do I have? Oh, so the hibiscus starts or cuts, or I don't know what to call them. They were a gift from a neighbor whose sister dug up a hibiscus bush because it was so ginormous, and like cut the root base into pieces, and then if you replant them that it grows into a new hibiscus bush. I got two. One went round on the newly landscaped side garden where I put my sunflowers and all the pollinator plants, and one went out on the front lawn in full sun. And one's red and one's pink, and they have been flowering like crazy. They're so beautiful, big, bold, beautiful flowers, absolutely amazing. I'm really, really pleased with how they're doing. It's just such a lovely burst of color. My plants that I kept buying for the landscaped area are doing pretty well. Some had a little bit of transplant shock, which isn't surprising because that area gets full sun. And in my ignorance, I guess, I bought a ton of plants that were on sale during the hottest period of the summer. So I was out there digging and putting them in and mulching around them and watering and stuff in 90 degree weather, absolutely full sun. And it was miserable. I almost passed out one day because I didn't realize how hot I was until I stood up to talk to a neighbor. And then I suddenly realized that the world was becoming very gray and fuzzy and that I should go sit down. So that kind of put an end to me just buying more plants for that side garden, because it was too hot to be out there. And then I had to water the bloody thing. And I don't have water on that side. So I'm like hauling watering cans around every night. And it was just a lot of work. But things are established now. I'm pretty happy. I'm obviously behind on weeding. I can never keep up with weeding. But I'm going to be mulching the hell out of all of the beds there the minute it cools off. So hopefully I will not have to worry about the weeds for a little bit longer. I am behind with everything in the garden, and I've come to realise that I'm never going to be caught up with the garden. And some of this is just, you know, me. Like, you know, I have a hard time sometimes juggling things, and I get overwhelmed, and then I get depressed. And when I'm depressed, it's really hard to do things. Or I'm sick and in pain, which again makes it hard to do things. But mainly what I figured is that you can never really be caught up when you're working with something that's alive. So there's always something with the chickens or the bees or the garden that needs to be done because they are living organisms. The garden can produce weeds faster than I can pull them. You know, the plants can get out of shape faster than I can prune them. The chickens can get into their usual shenanigans despite all my best attempts at corralling them. And so I'm trying to get used to the fact that, yes, if I'm going to keep doing this homesteading stuff, I just have to accept that I will never be caught up and that that's okay. I'm just doing the best I can. Every time I start feeling overwhelmed, I just tell myself that what I'm going for is a controlled kind of chaos. And I think I'm nailing that for sure right now. There's definitely a chaotic feel to the garden. But, you know, honestly, it's just been beautiful all year. Between the weeds that have been popping up, the flowering weeds in the lawn, which I've let grow. So, you know, I let my grass get a little long so those can blossom. They're good nectar sources. I've had wild flowers popping up in random places. So my seeding actually did something, and they're beautiful as well. Some have been in the lawn actually, which is really pretty. The gladiolas this year were stunning. I mean, they're stunning every year, but I put extra bulbs in. And I think the way that I didn't do this on purpose, I fully confess, but the way that I ended up planting the bulbs is now that they bloom one after the other. So we had a beautiful bloom of some of the gladiolas. And then as they were dying back, we had more start to unfurl. And then as those were dying back, even more started to bloom. And even now, when we're kind of almost past gladiola season, I do have a couple that have sent up these really like pale, delicate, lilac coloured flowers that are just stunning. So that was a really nice win for me this year. And yeah, generally speaking, yes, I'm behind. No, I didn't get to do everything that I wanted to. It doesn't look exactly how I want it to yet, but I am pleased with the progress that I made. And there was a lot to be thankful for in the garden this year. Before I get to some animal shenanigans, I'll do some quick hive updates. So I've got my three colonies still. They seem to be big and healthy. I finished my oxalic acid vapor treatments, three treatments in total. And in my last episode, I was talking about how I had kind of freaked myself out because A, it's new and I'm kind of shy of new things. B, you know, all the protective equipment that you have to wear to use a vaporizer is very intimidating. And then also, finally, I went down this rabbit hole of reading about mishaps that can happen, like people who had it kind of fly back in their face and they suffered facial burns, or people who accidentally burnt their hives down because they did something wrong. And that freaked me the hell out. But I, you know, went and I did it, and it really isn't, it's not a difficult process at all. It's just time consuming. You know, it takes a set amount of time for powder to vaporize, and then you need to leave the vaporizer for a bit so that it can cool down before you safely remove it, and then you have to let it continue to cool down outside of the hive, and the hive needs to be enclosed during the treatment, and then you keep that like smaller entrance and closed off top on for a minimum of 10 minutes after the treatment. And because I was basically going out, I was lifting the honey supers off, putting a big thing of cardboard on top, closing up the main entrance, then doing the vaporization treatment, then letting it cool and blah, 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 and going from hive to hive, that even though I have three hives, it was taking me about 15 minutes per hive. So that's 45 minutes right there, which feels like way too much time to treat three hives. But I'm hoping that as I get used to the process, I will kind of pick up a little bit of speed. But yeah, that all went well. And I actually, I did a mite check for the first time this year, because I've just been doing the treatments on the schedule that I said at the beginning of the year that I would follow. But now is the time of year when, if you're going to see the mite levels rise, now is the time. And as we move into fall, like, you really want to keep a close eye on those infestation levels. And I only got to do two of the three colonies before I noticed some robbing behavior happening, and I called it for the day. But of really excellent levels. So one of the hives was one mite out of 300 bees, and the other one was three mites out of 300 bees, which is like a spring level. So both very, very good, very low counts. When I get back out to do the extra colony, I'm not even sure if I'm going to cut this noise out. This is my dog trying to nest on the bed that's right next to this desk. And as she's like digging at it, the corner of it is hitting the desk. And my new microphone has a desk stand, so that's what that noise is. And I'm sick of cutting things out, so sorry. Sorry. That's my dog. She's noisy. Deal with it. Okay, so what was I saying? Yeah, so mic counts are low. When I go back out this week, hopefully, when this heat wave is over, because I can't stand it right now, and I do that hive that I hadn't had a chance to do previously, I might do another count on the other hives. At the very least, I'll be doing another count within a couple of weeks. I really want to really make sure that I don't miss anything. And also because once this heat wave is gone and we move closer to fall, that's great weather for formic acid treatment. So if I wanted to use my Formic Pro strips to deal with mites, we will be coming up to that good temperature range for those hopefully very soon. I took about 5 frames of honey to extract, and it was delicious. And then I bought more honey from my neighbor 2 doors down, and then my mentee 10 minutes away. And you know, obviously, if I'm going to buy honey, I'm going to buy it from my other backyard beekeeper people. My mentee was interesting, actually. When I went round, you know, we hung out because we're pretty good friends now, and we were just chatting and everything. And what's interesting is that, like I said, she lives about 10 minutes away, and they have 2 hives right now. And they hit the dearth where the nectar and the pollen starts drying up, but especially the nectar, way faster than we did. So it was kind of interesting. She's talking about, you know, what they're looking at and how they had to start feeding syrup, and how the hive became very, well, both hives became very tetchy, and they didn't want to be handled. They didn't want to be messed with, you know, all very common behavior for the dearth. And while she's talking about that, I'm still going through these sweet natured, docile bees just bringing in so much nectar and pollen and just so happy. And it was really interesting. And so we were talking about it. And part of what we realized was that a couple of key differences is where she lives is relatively high up. And so when it rains, the water drains away. And so they actually struggle more with dry conditions than with wet conditions. And as you know, if you've been listening to this podcast for even just a couple of episodes, we struggle with like things like flooding and being very wet and swampy over a good chunk of the property. So I think that played a huge part, because obviously access to water affects not just our bees, but production of nectar in the plants that are available. And then also, if you really look at her neighborhood, it's sort of it's very nice. It's more like a suburb. It doesn't have as many wild areas up close to it, and a lot of her neighbors do basic lawn gardens with maybe a couple of flowering plants. And I don't even know what kind of those plants offer. Like, I don't know if they're just kind of ornamental or if they actually do produce, you know, good nectar or anything. So I think between the difference in water and plants and so forage, they hit the dearth a good, I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks before we did. And I'd say that we're kind of in the dearth. I was going to say we definitely are, but the goldenrod has been blooming like crazy. So we're actually kind of going into our second flow, our full flow, which we're very fortunate to have. And thinking about forage, you know, a lot of my neighbors, even though I'm also on kind of a nice, slightly suburban-ish road, a lot of my neighbors grow food. They have, you know, gardens bursting with flowers. We have a fair amount of wild places where there's tons of goldenrod. There's lots of wildflowers. There's flowering trees. We're very wooded. Those are all around us here. And just generally, I think the bees here have more access to nectar and pollen for longer than in a more sort of lawn environment, which I think is probably more of what, you know, urban beekeepers would deal with, where there's not as much flowering plant life all the way through the year. So that was kind of interesting. It really made me think, because like I said, she's 10 minutes away. That's nothing. I wouldn't have imagined that it would be so different in conditions. But, you know, there you have it. Learn something new every day. So, are my bees doing well? They seem to be. I will have more news for you on that next time I record, because I'm a little behind, but I'm hoping to go out, do a full inspection, give them some, you know, good food, probably start to make syrup up for at least the one of the hives, which is a little behind the others, and then keep an eye on the others to make sure that they don't go through what they have too soon, because I want them to have lots and lots of honey available for the winter. All right, so that's my updates. Let's quickly do some animal shenanigans. So aside from the sadness of Petal, another kind of issue that we had with the hens was I'd mentioned in my last episode that Bernadette, one of my Orpingtons, had decided that she was going to be a mother. And so she laid claim to the nest box that I have on the ground in the coop. It's like a covered nest box. And she was guarding it. And I quickly realized that she was guarding the nest box, but she wasn't laying eggs anymore because of her hormones, and she wasn't letting the other hens lay eggs. So she's just brooding on substrate. She doesn't quite get the fact that eggs will equal babies. So I was just sort of kind of trying to get her over the broodiness, but not trying super hard. So I would just turf her out every time I saw her. Sometimes I'd hold her in front of the fan that I have out there for them for the really hot days to kind of cool her belly a bit. You know, I'd encourage her to come out and, you know, forage with the others. But, you know, she was pretty persistent. And then finally, something happened and a switch went in her brain and she realized that she needs an egg to sit on. But notice how I said an egg, because she would only allow one hen to lay an egg in there and then she'd guard that egg. Well, me being the meanie that I am, I took that egg every day. So every day she lets one hen in, they lay one egg, she guards that egg, and then mean old me comes along, gets rid of that egg. After doing this for a couple of days, I think she figured out motherhood wasn't happening and she started foraging a bit more. She was up and about more. She stopped doing those awful, ginormous broody poops that they do when they're broody. However, broodiness is infectious. And who is my broodiest hen? Dahlia, my remaining frizzle hen. And did she catch the broodiness? She did. Did it last long? Thank God it did not. She was broody for like 5 days, and I would pick her up every day and put her on the ground and encourage her to go out, and I'd hold her in front of the fan, and I'd tell her, there will be no babies for you, Dahlia. Stop it. And we did that for 5 days. And finally, she was like, you know what, human? Whatever. I'm done with you. I'm done with this. I don't need babies. Who said I do? And she went right back to being a normal grumpy hen as opposed to a broody grumpy hen. In other chickeny news, my favorite chick, I'm so torn about this news. My favorite chick is a rooster. And I'm torn because I don't know if anyone remembers, but when he hatched, I immediately was like, that one's a boy, because his comb was already bigger, even from just hatching. And as he started to grow, you know, the comb stayed much bigger than his siblings. And he just started getting kind of a look about him where I was like, oh, I think this one is going to be a rooster. And I'm sad, obviously, because I don't think I have the space in the run for two roosters. And because I keep them in the run for the whole of winter, which is relatively long here in Ohio, I don't think I can keep him. I do still have him. I am hoping that I can find a really good home for him because he is a purebred English Orpington and he's gorgeous. I'll post a picture. He's black with green iridescence and then his front is the deep reddy chestnut that his dad is. And he is hand tame. You know, he eats out of my hand. He's very curious. I can pick him up. He's not aggressive. He hasn't fully come into his hormones yet, so that could change. But I think, considering how sweet he is now, I think he will continue to be a sweet rooster. So I'm hopeful that I can find a good home for him. And I know I need to start doing that soon, but I am reluctant because I love him a lot and I've named him. So I did call him Rocky the Rooster. And then he's so showy and glossy and beautiful that I was actually thinking about maybe calling him Bowie, like David Bowie. But we'll see. He's here for now and it's okay. And he's separate from his dad. But at some point, we're going to have to make a decision. In sort of adjacent to chickeny news, the raccoon Fat Fred, who is the bane of my existence. This is the raccoon that ate all of my fish and would chase the cats, the stray cats, off their food bowls. He figured out when I was feeding my cat, Topaz, and would come down and steal her food. So I had to mix up meal times. And I thought, okay, we're sold now, we're done. Fat Fred has decided that I'm not worth it. He's gone off to raid a dumpster somewhere, I'm sure. Well, then I see this other raccoon and I'm like, well, that's either Fat Fred who's lost a lot of weight or this is a different raccoon. And I was leaning towards the latter and then I saw her again. And it's a her because what does she have? She has two precious little babies. Now, the first thing I did was say, babies, do not go anywhere near my dogs. I do not want you throwing yourselves to your death like the other two raccoons did. So if we could just avoid that, please. And then I said to the mama, you have to live because if these babies are orphaned, they become ridiculous and will throw themselves at dogs. So you must live. And then I kind of regretted telling them to live because I realized that I had been a fool. And the hole in the lower roof of my barn, if you are a nimble creature, you will go through that hole and you're in the lower level. But if you go climbing from that hole upwards, you get to the upper level. The upper level that I thought that I had fully closed off, because if anyone remembers, it is a latrine. The raccoons would get in there and they'd all poop one after the other up there in my barn. And I realized that Mama and her babies now live in my barn. And I saw her come out, grab the little plastic dish that had the wet cat food on it for Topaz, my cat, my stray cat friend, and hold it in her mouth, climb back through that hole, climb up to the top of the barn and clearly give it to her baby. So I was like, God damn it. How am I going to get around this? So I had to stand guard over Topaz every time she ate, which was really annoying. I'm not exactly drowning in free time, and it was taking her a while because she wanted to be petted and whatever. And then I had to go in the barn sometimes. I do keep some things in the lower level, and I banged on the ceiling and I had, like, you know, scribble, and I then saw these two adorable little faces poking out to look at me, and I got a couple of pictures of them and I'll put it on my Instagram. As of last week, the family has appeared to move on, which is great, because please stop pooping up there. I can't even imagine what it's going to look like up there since they were clearly living there for a while. I do not have the courage to go up there. I'm just leaving it. I can't deal with it right now. We are going to try and get that hole covered. But now that she knows that place is a good place to be, she'll probably just find another way to get in there. So we're going to have to be really careful in terms of closing that bloody barn up. I'm ready to have it bulldozed, but that's going to be expensive. And what with the septic system needing to be done before winter, and then Kaylee's surgery, and then my surgery, I don't have the kind of money to also be knocking down a barn and building another one. So that's just going to have to go on the list of many, many house things that has to wait, which is frustrating, but it is what it is. In other animal shenanigans, one of my pink tongue skinks dropped her tail. I knew this was theoretically possible. I have never encountered anyone or any article demonstrating that this has actually happened before. So as far as I know, I might be the only one who's ever publicly talked about it. I think she got really fed up with the boy, and I think he maybe cornered her. He has sometimes been aggressive outside of breeding season, and she dropped her tail and I freaked out, and I had to do this whole vet visit stuff with her, and it's going to regrow. It is regrowing right now, and she's actually doing really, really well. But that was a big expense that I didn't need, because I had to drop her off as an emergency at the exotic vet, and that's expensive. And then I had Titan is still recovering from his hemipenal abscess. I think he's fully recovered. The sutures came out, so I can put him back into a natural enclosure where he can burrow and climb and, you know, be exposed to things that I was trying to keep away from the incision site. But now that it's all closed up, you know, he is, you know, cleared, medically cleared, and he is going to be retired. He will no longer be breeding. I don't think he can anymore. And he's just going to live out his twilight years as like a beloved pet and possibly an outreach animal for when my husband does work with school children, because he's very docile, he's very gentle, and he's quite charming, I think. And I think kids will really respond to him. My babies are almost all sold, apart from some of the ones that had, you know, minor issues that I'm still keeping an eye on them for. All the healthy babies, I've only got four left. One's going out tomorrow. I've got another one on hold, and I'm in communication with a couple of people about the remaining two. So hopefully I will be free of the babies soon, and I can just focus on the ones that needed that little extra time to really make sure they were 100%. And I'm hoping I can get those sold out before the cold weather really gets here. And if you follow me on Instagram, you might have seen my new obsession, which is Spider Friend, as I have called her. I've actually been calling Spider Friend that so much that that has become her name. So I ended up getting a regal jumping spider when we were at the Reptile Expo. I have been fascinated with them for a long time, and my husband's been trying to get me to get a spider of some kind for a while. But what really kind of sealed the deal was I found some really great Instagram accounts that I was super enjoying of people who keep jumping spiders, and because they hunt visually, they kind of learn who their person is, and they're quite responsive to people. So they'll come up and they'll wave their little legs at you, and they seem to indicate when they want to come out. You can handle them. They seem to almost like being handled in some cases, you know, when people have really built up that relationship. And so we're there at the expo, and a lot of people had them, and they had enclosures. You could buy the enclosure ready to go with the spider, and I caved. And so now I have a spider friend, and I just absolutely love her. I love watching her. I love feeding her. We feed her crickets, which I don't love crickets, but I'm willing to feed them to her because that's what she likes. And she's just a happy spider, and so far so good. I am working on a much larger, fancier enclosure for her because my spider friend deserves the very best. And that's coming along nicely, and soon hopefully I'll be able to move her into that, and she will have her new fancy home. And that's kind of it for news. I mean, there's probably a million other things that have been happening that I'm not going to get into, like, real quick, my nan, my mum's mum, who's 95, by the way, fell and broke her hip, and she's been in the hospital, and she's doing okay, but it's like constant, is she ready to go home? No. Does she want to go home? Yes. You know, what do we need to do, kind of thing? And then I had some other family stuff going on. It's just, it's been all go over here, which is why it's been so hard for me to record. But I did it. Hooray! I think I got all the way through this time. Let's see if this is usable, unlike the first time I attempted this and it was completely rubbish. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about next time. I will figure it out in between recordings. Maybe more bee stuff, because I'm hoping I'll get out there on Thursday, maybe Friday, and have a good rummage around and make sure all my bee friends are okay. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for bearing with me as I sort of disappear randomly due to various health issues and brain issues and bullshit. I appreciate your patience with me. Check me out on Instagram. It's Homestead Hens and Honey, all one word. That's where I'm going to put photos of things that I talk about, so you can see like my garden and my chickies and my spider friend and my skinks and all that good stuff. And until next time, remember, hug your hens and then wash your hands. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back hopefully very soon. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.